freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Ewart. And Brooke Ewart.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Ewart and Mike Salk.
Well, I can promise you this, Brady Henderson in for Mike Salk. I can promise you today is a Friday, at the end of the show this afternoon, Bob Stelton will join us in a half an hour. And I can promise you, when they finish their show in Peoria, Arizona today, they're going to say the same thing. I can't believe this week's over. I can't believe this is over. I can't believe it's coming to an end. And I got to say, Brady, final hour for you and I, hour number 9 in 3 days here. I mean, it's just flown right by. I can't believe it's coming to an end.
It is amazing how quickly. I mean, I feel like I just woke up. I feel like I just rolled out of bed and heard my alarm go off.
Yes.
The show goes by quick because it's a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying it.
Good. It's an absolute blast. Maura and Justin have been terrific this week, filling in, crushing the 6 a.m. hour. Maura's had an idea every single day. What was the first idea with you and I she played? It was the anonymous, right?
We had to guess the prospect.
Yep, yeah. We had to guess the prospect. Yesterday was a pitch clock, and Maura Dooley, we had talked about some old game shows, and Monty Hall came to mind, and Maura thought, why don't we finish a Friday with a little game show? The stage is yours.
We're going to play a little Let's Make a Deal. This music is so cheesy.
So, Brock can be sometimes, so I think it fits.
What? Cheesy?
You just asked me if I could make the Drew Timmy to the Hoosiers soundtrack.
Yes. No, the Strother shot. I don't need Timmy missing free throws. No, Strother.
Now, this is not Deal or No Deal. This game show was before my time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're really not following the format of either show. We're just kind of using the name.
Okay.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on some potential Seahawks trades in the draft. There's actually not a lot of people predicting trades for the Seahawks. Is not as many as I feel like you would normally see, since I think a lot of people assume they're going to use this number 5 pick, but there are a few out there, so I want to see what you guys think. First up is Ben Standig of The Athletic. He's suggesting a trade up with the Cardinals. So this is the offer.
Okay.
The Cardinals get pick 5, pick 52 in the second round, pick 123 in the fourth round, and a 2024 third rounder. And the Seahawks get the 3rd overall pick and select Anthony Richardson.
No deal for me.
No deal.
I kind of thought that might
be
it. That's a little hot.
No deal. There's no way that Arizona's going to trade in the division anyway. So
that
just simply is not going to happen. It's just terrible, dysfunctional, messed up as that organization is, even as with all of that said, they would not ever do that. So that won't happen. And I don't see as many selfies as we're going to see. Brady, I don't see the Seahawks going up in any way, giving away capital.
Well, yeah, and just because the only team that they could conceivably trade, now I shouldn't say that, but the only team where, at least as I look at it right now, that it would make sense to trade up with is number 3, because then you'd be jumping another team. Now, you would only do that if you think that the team at number 4 is going to take your guy. So you jump up to jump them and get your guy. But, you know, I'd be curious to know how many intra-division trades have happened in the draft, especially in that part of the first round. Now,
correct.
The other part of that is, and I don't have the draft value chart in front of me, but I believe Salk and I talked about this last week, and the price to go from 5 to 3, that's like about a second round pick, so maybe 52, but what they're giving up beyond that, I think that would be too much. Now, look, if it's another team there and you're trying to make this trade work, maybe you could even it out by either giving up less or getting more in return in addition to that 3rd overall pick. But that deal as it stands, that's giving up too much, I think, just based on the draft value chart.
I think the only player that I would go up for is Will Anderson. And I think he is the only player that Arizona is going to target.
Well, don't start naming other deals you might make.
Oh, okay.
You guys are both saying no to this one.
Yep.
No deal.
Sorry, Maura. Okay, next.
Just kidding. You don't want to venture into other territory we might get to.
True. Okay, go ahead.
And people can win. They could lose. They could get zonked. You never know what's going to happen.
Let's make a deal.
All right. Next up, Alex Kay of Bleacher Report suggests a trade back with the Commanders. The Seahawks get pick 16 in the first round, pick 118 in the fourth round, and a 2024 first rounder.
Mm.
The Commanders get pick 5 from the Seahawks this year.
No deal. That's not
enough.
No deal. That's not enough. Now, the general rule of thumb, when you're trading picks when you're talking about, trading picks this year and the pick you get is next year, because you're not immediately reaping the benefit of that pick, that first round pick next year, that's equivalent to like a second round pick this year, because you don't get to pick a player this year. You have to wait to really reap the benefits of that pick. So if you're talking about maybe another second rounder this year and then some, maybe, but that's not enough.
No, this team has too many needs. This team has got the best draft capital that they've had in some time to address a lot of difference makers they've got to add. And I don't see, and the biggest difference maker of all is going to be somewhere in the top 10. You give me a deal and you trade down somewhere within the top 10. I think there are 10 freaky difference-making dudes. At 16, you don't get that guy. So that is a no deal. No bueno, zero, zip, zilch, and you're going to like it.
All right. Easy enough. We'll move on.
Let's make a deal.
This one's from Zach Dimmitt of SI. He suggests a trade back with the Bills, not for the fifth pick the Seahawks have, for the pick 20. Get pick 20. The Seahawks get pick 27 and a third and fourth rounder. And with pick 27, they take guard Osiris Torrance.
Now, this is, I think, the first one that I'm going to...
Yeah.
That I'm going to take a strong, and because I've been Dr. No to everything else, actually this one I'm going to say yes to.
I'm going to say, now I'll tell you a quick story. I was moving out of my apartment in Magnolia in 2010 where I lived with three other buddies. And I was moving in with my buddy Pat. We were moving into a place that he bought. And we were trying to divvy up the furniture, right? And so the other two guys made us an offer for the entertainment center. And they made us a good offer. Now, Pat says, let's step out on the balcony and discuss this. And he pulls me out there and he goes, all right, this is a really good deal that they're offering us, but we're going to get more out of them. So we went back in and we were able to finagle a little bit more. So that would be my reaction to this trade. That's a good deal, but I'm going to try to get another, maybe fifth or sixth round pick just to supplement
that. Did you get the CD changer? Did you get the 10 disc changer?
No, it wasn't an entertainment center. It was like a TV stand. That's what I meant. Yeah.
I'm waiting for you to be like, yeah, he went on and found Google, so he's pretty good negotiator. Yeah.
He said, this is a really good offer, but we're going to squeeze some more out of him.
Adding the third and fourth, there's going to be a lot of depth in this draft. And this team, as I said, not only with their starters or second stringers, just adding depth, critical. So I kind of like that one. Okay, we got one more. We got to do this one
all
fast.
All right, this one we're just going to do, instead of a trade, we're just going to go between two mock drafts here, and you pick the one you would most want. So we have Mel Kiper's most recent mock draft for the Seahawks, Anthony Richardson at pick 5, Jaxon Smith-Njigba at 20, and then we have Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah's from Moving the Sticks, their most recent one. They have Jalen Carter at pick 5 to the Seahawks and Jordan Addison at pick 20.
Hard pass on both. Yep, I take a hard pass on both. We're not even close on the entertainment center. We're not close on the disc changer. We're not close on the furniture. I'm not taking either of those.
Jalen Carter at 5. No, now Jalen Carter, if you trade back and get him in the teens maybe, or maybe the 20s, then yeah, but I'm not taking him at 5.
Yeah. Yeah, we're basically Dr. No.
Three
out of four, no deal.
No deal. Yeah.
Nope, 3 out of 4, no deal.
We're playing hardball over here, guys.
Yeah, and even you on the one I said yes to said, I think, hey, come out on the balcony. I think we can work a few things out.
Step out on the balcony with me.
That might be your line of the week. Hey, we got to step out on the balcony.
Talk this over.
Hey, we got to step away because Need to Know is coming your way next.
Brock, I'm going to play you out with something that you asked.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, please do.
Come on, let's go. But you also dominated the offensive glass. Chances are you'll get more than one
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, first of all, you need to know the Mariners opening day, T-Mobile, is 6 days away. It is here. The light at the end of the tunnel after a long spring training, though very productive, is coming. And last night was, well, it was the most explosive offensive affair of the entire spring for the Mariners. 17-6 winners, but they scored 15 of those in the first four innings. 10 extra base hits in the first five innings. 5 home runs overall. And Mr. Murph, well, he got the big one, the 3-run bomb in the top of the third.
Oh, Tom Murphy swings and crushes it. Absolutely blasted near the scoreboard. Gone. Wow. Tom Murphy, a 3-run blast.
Well, good night, guys. See ya.
What was that? Can you just play the very beginning? Was that the crack of the bat?
Both teams are changing. Very active goaltender for the...
Oh,
sorry, I went to the next one.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, here we go.
Tom Murphy swings and crushes it. Absolutely blasted near the scoreboard. Gone.
That had to be the loudest. I mean, we've heard a lot of crack of the bats. We were down there around the batting cages. We listened to a bunch of them. Maura, you and I were sitting there watching the game. Who was it that was at Teo? That hit that bomb that day early in the
where
week.
Where we couldn't see where it landed.
Yes, I was on the phone with Kyle Brown talking, and I think it was Kelnick or somebody hit one. He's like, what was that? I said, oh, that was a home run. That was when Jerry DePoto says this has been a loud spring training, Brady, for a lot of the guys. That was loud last night.
Yeah, that kind of reminded me of the golf tournaments, right, when they've got the microphones on the tee box and you can really hear the thud of the club hitting the ball. My question to you, Brock, are you buying it? Are you buying what David Schoenfeld was selling, that the Mariners are going to win the AL West?
I'm not buying that yet. Kind of like G was talking about Gonzaga's culture, the Houston Astros, until you unseat them, they are the champs. They've been in the World Series multiple times. They have owned this division. They have owned you. They've owned some of your pitchers. So I'm not there. They're not 16 games behind them as they were a season ago. They've closed that gap significantly. But I don't know if I can take myself like Schoenfeld all the way there.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Because Maura is so good on the ones and twos, I'm going to ask her to play a different John Schneider cut than the one I have every other time. This will be cut 13. Yesterday, John Schneider, kind of like Jerry DePoto, steps into and on the mic here on the Seattle Sports Station. He does so with Bob and Dave every single Thursday. Kind of asked about this tour that they have been on, Brady, this collegiate tour through Columbus, Tuscaloosa, and into beautiful Lexington, Kentucky today. The GM asked about just cultivating relationships with these colleges.
They're great, but you know, all these schools, the coaches are all out there, and they want to help the players as much as they possibly can. You know, our area scouts take a ton of pride in the background and using the, you know, developing sources and having relationships throughout the year at the school. So you have to be careful with these at pro days and these types of school visits where, you know, it's not all, you know, just sunshine, right? It's all, you know, you got to be careful that not you don't get, you know, just all the positives and you know, no negatives on guys. So you're trying to get a true picture of the person.
Brock, my job is very different than John Schneider's job. But there is some carryover here, and this is the time of the year where these guys are kind of like reporters. And you heard John Schneider mention the sources there that they have with different schools. It's just like having a source when you're a reporter. You've got to find somebody who can really give you the inside information. That's what these guys are trying to go to these schools for. It's not only to see them throw and to see them run and to see them jump and to get the measurements and to get the medical checks and everything. They're talking to people at these schools. Now, a big part of that is the area scouts who are going to these schools and spending a lot of time with them throughout the year, throughout the football season. But they're being reporters. They're talking to guys, talking to the equipment staff, talking to the coaching staff, talking to other players. Hey, what is this guy like? What makes him tick? What kind of person is he in addition to what kind of player is he?
That's great. You say source, I would say relationship. And they're the same thing. You've got to have that trust and cultivate those relationships so you can get people to be honest on, or in this case, off the record as well. Next.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, this happened just about a minute and a half ago. I'll get to Gonzaga. That's the third thing you need to know. But about a minute and a half ago, not surprising news, not groundbreaking news, but certainly news, Luis Castillo will indeed be the opening day starter for the Seattle Mariners. They traded for him. They paid him. He was their ace. He was their ace in the playoffs. But Robbie Ray was still a Cy Young Award winner, and has had an unbelievable, obviously much better spring as Luis is still ramping up, and Robbie Ray is there. But The Rock will be the opening day starter for your Mariners. Scott Service making that formal and official about a minute and a half ago. It was one for the ages last night, man. You put Gonzaga and UCLA. Doesn't matter the names on the jerseys on the back of it. You just put Gonzaga and UCLA on the front of it, and they go play in the tournament, and magic happens. Memories happen. Moments, one shining moment. This will be in the video. I guarantee it happened like Julian Strother's shot last night.
Well, because you've also dominated the offensive glass. Chances are you'll get more than one opportunity. Walker for the lead.
You got to get out of the way, bro. Like, Aaron Goldsmith, he filled in a month ago. He said, hey, you got to get out of the way. You have to hear the crack of the bat. And that's not that. It's as if he was doing radio. Like, a radio, you got to paint the picture, right? You don't know. You can even buy an extra second or two. TV, the image is right there. Just be quiet. Just set the stage. Here it goes. Here comes the moment. Let Harlan do his thing. Jeez. Sorry, I had to just get that on my chest.
I knew you were upset when a random... I mean, not it wasn't random because it happened, but in an unprompted text went out in the group thread last night.
Very bothered last night.
How upset you were by that.
Very bothered, and he was like challenging the decision making of Mick Cronin, and like, why would you foul in this? Like, you foul in this moment, extend the game. It was a great decision. They're poor free throw shooters, and then when you're wrong, and I've been wrong on a broadcast, and I know, and it's good to have an opinion. I'm glad he had an opinion. But when I've been wrong and I'm like, man, they really should throw it here, or they should run it, or they got to do this, and it turns out my analysis was wrong, you know what I say? Whew,
I was
I'm
wrong.
Glad I'm not coaching. Boy, I sure butchered that call. I mean, just come back to it. So, anywho, that's enough of that.
Well, I'm excited to see Luis Castillo. I figure, and I know Salk's not here, but it still feels appropriate that we should at least, from a distance, I know Salk got the notification and he's thinking it.
You ever been on a pottery wheel?
Me?
No. You've never worked a pottery wheel?
Have not.
Really? Jesse?
No. You I would Betsy like to,
ever,
I would...
You and Betsy ever worked a pottery wheel?
I bet you she would like to do it. I would love to do one of those.
You should.
I've seen pottery classes in Seattle. I would sign up for that.
You should. You think Bob Stelton's ever worked a little pottery? Vic, don't you, I think you use your foot to kind of spin the thing, right? Like, I could see him just spinning the pottery. What do we think? We got Bob.
I can't see it. No.
In his romance, his dating, all of his affairs. You think he's ever, like, not
guy.
Affairs. Like,
affairs.
Not affairs. Not that kind.
Not that kind of affair.
Dump that.
Okay, let's just talk to Bob.
Bob's next. Bye.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
What a week. What a week it's been. Salk's been out for the majority of it. Brady Henderson in his place. Ryan Roland-Smith yesterday. I should really say Rob Roland-Smith because about half the show was about the Sand Hill Warrior himself, Ryan's dad. When Dave Wyman joined the show yesterday, Brady, we were 6 minutes in giggling, talking before Dave was like, are you going to ask me a question? So I'm not going to let it go 6 minutes. I'm going to let it go about 30 seconds and introduce the great Bob Stelton down in Arizona. Bobby, how has the week been down at spring training?
Brock, good to talk to you. Brady, how are you, my friend?
What's up, Bob?
Well, I'm up, which is weird. This is a weird time for me to be awake, but I'm doing it for you guys.
You know what? I appreciate that, man. When you have to get up early like this at 9:30, do you set your alarm multiple times? Do you wake up restless in the middle of the night or the middle of the morning?
Yeah, it's pressure. It's like I got to take a test tomorrow type of thing. So, yeah, I felt like I was a little anxious going to bed last night, and I set two alarms. I set one for 9:15, one for 9:20, and I told Maura to text me. So
perfect.
That's how much I didn't want to miss this segment with you guys. I didn't want to sleep through it.
We appreciate it, man. I've enjoyed many of the interviews. I don't know, Jerry. Well, you didn't because you were sleeping. Jerry DePoto joined us early yesterday, contrast the morning show with the afternoon show. Same picnic table, same location, same spot and everything else. And he said, well, the difference is the morning show gets their work in, like a lot of players, and then gets on their way. The afternoon guys are here, like John Belushi, all day. Can't get enough of it. And I'm going to guess for you, Bobby, one of your first times down there in this capacity, the baseball guy that you are, man, has this just filled the tank?
Yes, it does, man. I really am in my element here. I'm geeking out on everything. I'm peppering everybody with questions. I was, you know, bending Alvin Davis's ear yesterday, talking about the Traject machine and what he sees out of it, and talking to Dan Wells. These are guys off the air, and then everybody on the air just talking about the different elements of spring training and what they're excited about and who they, you know, it's just, it's really cool to see these guys, Brock, as you know, in a really relaxed atmosphere. And it is a different vibe in speaking with them. When you interview them, everybody's just got the wall is down, and everybody's excited right now, and everybody's got a really, really strong sense of optimism about this team and a real anxiousness to get the regular season going, because I think last year just whet the appetite of the players, the fan base, and you feel it. You feel it. We had Greg Amsinger on from MLB Network, and he talked about all the camp. They've been to 9 different spring training sites. And he said, hands down, it wasn't even close. The best vibe he had at any of them was with the Mariners, him and his partner. So you were here, you felt it. It's a great, great time right now.
All right, Bob, we're going to reverse the roles here. Normally, I'm answering questions from you, but I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you one. The vibes All right. are good. You've been down there. You've seen this team. You've read about them. Now, we had our friend David Schoenfeld from ESPN on the show earlier this morning, and he said he predicts the Mariners to win the AL West. I'm curious, do you buy that? Do you think they've closed enough ground to make up 16 games in that deficit in the division? Can they win the division?
Oh, boy, that's really optimistic. I think the fact that Jose Altuve is going to be out for a couple of months to open the season is a big feather in the cap of the Mariners. That certainly will help. I don't know that they, talent-wise, if you're just looking at both teams on paper, did they close that gap? No. If I'm going to be realistic, I don't think they did. But with the pitching staff, this pitching staff is going to be amongst the best in baseball, because you really don't have a weak – I mean, if you're looking at Marco Gonzalez as your weak spot, that's a veteran. That's a guy who you look more often than not as giving you a quality start. No, he's not blowing guys away, and he's not striking out 9 or 10, but he just kind of quietly is efficient. He tends to have a bad inning. And then you think, all right, the wheels are coming off. And then you look up at the end of the day and 6 innings, 3 runs. He's giving you a quality start. He's keeping you in the game. And you're looking at him as the weak link. So there are very few rotations that can 1 through 5 roll a guy out there and feel like we got a great shot to win today. And it's all about, to me, their offense. That's been their problem the past 2 years. They've had pitching and defense. It's been absolutely outstanding the past 2 years. Offense is where they struggled. They really struggled with runners on base last year. And it feels like the lineup is longer. And then you count on the progression, obviously, of Julio with a year under his belt. And Kelnick has looked unreal this spring. Now, does that translate to the regular season? We'll find out. But I think for him, having that success, seeing that ball land in the grass, seeing that ball over the fence, it means more to him, where we tend to disqualify spring training stats, good or bad, and just say, yeah, it's spring training. Let's see what's happening in the regular season. I think for him, it's got a different meaning. So I like the way the lineup looks. It doesn't mean there aren't some concerns here and there, but I think they've closed the gap a bit. But if I'm being realistic, I don't know that they've closed the gap enough on the Astros to say they're going to win the division.
I got a couple deeply personal questions for you. So I'm going to keep those in the back pocket for a little bit. You're just crushing it, by the way. For a guy that doesn't normally see 9:30 in the morning, you wouldn't know it. You sound like you've been up for hours.
For 7 minutes. So about 7-8 minutes now. Yeah.
You have been totally crushing it. Before a couple deeply personal questions that you know that I like to ask, you pepper with questions. Yeah. I ask personal questions. Before I do that, give me the player. Give me the thought that maybe you had going into this week, and then all of a sudden over the course of the week, seeing it up close, getting a feel for it, getting behind the scenes, that maybe has changed that thought or changed that perception when it comes to a Mariner player, a Mariner theme, a Mariner storyline, that just with the access that you've gotten and the John Belushi there all day information, anything changed in your mind?
Not changed so much as I was curious about what we didn't know about somebody like Cooper Hummel. Didn't really know much about him. Knew he was from Portland, played in Arizona. He was the guy that came over in exchange for Kyle Lewis. And you look at his numbers and you're going, all right, what do we got here? You know, they're not impressive. Yeah.
Negative war, right? 168 at bats, like a 170 average. Yep.
Yeah. And you're just going, all right, what is this just a guy? Just you wanted to get rid of Kyle? What's going on here? So, he's been having a tremendous spring. Again, it's spring. I get it. We'll see what happens. But B, I don't know if you had a chance to hear the conversation we had with him. This is a guy who grew up a Mariner fan. He talked about having the mural, the logo painted on his wall as a kid, that he had a Mariner's trash can, that he had Mariner beer steins, that he had these balls autographed by different Mariners. I mean, he's a Mariner maniac. And in hearing him talk about it, in the sense of enthusiasm, in the ear-to-ear smile he had the entire time, like he looked like a fan who won the opportunity to hang out with the Mariners for a day. That's what he looked like. He was so excited. He was so pumped to be talking about the fact that he's a Mariner, and he, you know, he's a guy that they look at as a utility guy. He's a catcher. He made a brilliant running catch in right field. They got him playing some third. He said, "I have a glove for every position." He said, "I got a giant bag. I got three catcher's mitts, and I have a glove for every single position." I saw him working with Perry Hill, working on the first base drills, and just, you know, his enthusiasm was really infectious. I don't know if he's going to be a good player or a great player, but he's a guy that I've just, you know, after speaking with him and watching him, I'm really interested in seeing what he brings to the table. And then the other guy you know about, and that's Logan Gilbert. And this is something, Brock, I think you would love about him, is just his work ethic is ridiculous. He is always the last guy out there by hours. He's out there by himself with all of his gadgets, and he's out there just working. And, you know, the gadget thing is funny, but to me, I'm looking at it going, that's a guy who's just so, so fired up to get better. So he's like, is this going to help me get better? I'll try it. Oh, that's going to help me get better? I'll try it. You know, so I love that attitude. I love that he's taking every step to get better, and he is the last person out there every single day, him and Ichiro. Ichiro still works out for hours a day, doing laps around the field. He's out there long tossing, stretching. It's just that part's fun. But, yeah, the work ethic of Logan Gilbert and Cooper Hummel, just as a curiosity about him, are the two things that really stuck out so far.
That is awesome. Okay, so I do like asking personal questions, but I feel like I reciprocate. Like I'm willing to answer anything that comes my way. So I'm going to share just a quick little story of a fishing trip for Father's Day that Damon and I took Coach Mike on, our dad, Grandpa Mike. Well, Damon is a little more on your spectrum, Bob, when it comes to germs, when it comes to disinfectants, when it comes to that level. He's very
like a good man.
Yep, he's a good man, but he's very, very tuned into that. So we pull into this hotel in Nia Bay. And I knew it. I had stayed there before. It's on the reservation. It's not up to certain codes. It's pretty tough. It's pretty rugged. And so Damon knew that too. Therefore, Damon brought a sleeping bag and his own pillow because he was not getting under the sheets in this I don't want to say cheap hotel, but yep, hotel out there. So Grandpa Mike then, there are three beds in this room, Grandpa Mike gets into his tighty-whitey skimpies. Does he have a pillow? Does he have a sleeping bag? And I think Damon was gagging, like literally dry heaving, puking at Grandpa Mike and the thought of just getting in your tighty-whities into this hotel bed. So I frame my question with that in mind. So you get into a VRBO. Down there, it's a room that Justin or Maura had. When Bob Stelton goes into a VRBO, are you willing to get into the sheets, into the bed, the pillowcase, or do you, like
He's
Damon...
He's in Justin's, by the way. Wyman already clarified with me.
Do you bring your own sleeping bag and own pillow?
Wait, did you say I was in Justin's room?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Did you like the record player in there? Did you put anything on that guy, or did you put it off to the side of the room?
The Billie Eilish record is still on there.
Yeah, good.
I haven't touched it, but I didn't really... Justin, I love you, buddy. I would have felt better if I were in Maura's room. Had I known that, I might have quit. But, you know, if the hotel routine that you just described is my routine, I will not touch the comforter. First thing I do is I walk into the room and I throw it onto the ground. I never, ever, ever walk on the carpet in a hotel in my bare feet. And, you know, that for that situation, that makes perfect sense to me. And I love Damon, and I knew there was a reason I loved Damon. Now, being out here, I have a little more trust, and to be honest, I thought I was in Maura's room, so I felt like there was a better opportunity for fewer germs. There was going to be more care taken of the room, so I didn't throw the comforter. I did roll it down to the bottom. Okay. I haven't really used it, but I didn't throw it on the floor, and I still have been walking with no bare feet on the floor, not because of germs, only because I had a friend out here who I stayed with at one point who said, "Hey, make sure you put your shoes up on a desk or a dresser."
Scorpions.
And I said, "Why?" Exactly. And I thought he was kidding. He goes, oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you. You got to put your shoes up. I'm like, why? And he goes, well, scorpions. I'm like, ah, you're funny. That's hilarious. He goes, no, I'm not kidding. I didn't sleep that whole night, of course. I had the lights on. I was like walking, avoiding landmines, going to the bathroom at night. So, yeah, I the socks will stay on at all times, but not nearly the germ factor fear that I have in a regular hotel.
Okay. Along those lines, similar vein, will you use the washer and dryer at a hotel or, in this case, a VRBO?
No, absolutely not, because here's why. I not that I think they're germy or, well, hotel, that's different. Yeah, I wouldn't, that feels a little unsanitary. But here, I'm just going to put all my dirty clothes into my dirty suitcase. See, what I don't want to do is wash my clothes, get them nice and clean, then put them in the suitcase that isn't probably clean. It's had dirty clothes in it over the years. And then it gets thrown into this, you know, below belly part of the plane with everybody else's common unwashed clothes in there. It's co-mingling, Brock. It's co-mingling with.
But it's still in your suitcase, right?
Yeah, like the outside of the suitcase might get dirty, but not the inside.
Yeah, it's, well, listen, it's cloth. It's not. I don't have one of those hard shell suitcases.
Wait, I have a question here. So you take your suitcase to spring training that has had dirty clothes in it.
Yeah.
Do you wash it before you put your clean clothes and pack to go down there?
Real quick wipe down with one of those Lysol wipes, Justin. Okay. I get one of those Lysol wipes. I wipe out the inside of my suitcase. But even then, I don't feel totally secure. I don't feel like I'm wearing really clean clothes. You know, I have them hanging up at home. They're all just thrown into a big, giant box, essentially. So I don't want to clean them, put them in a semi-dirty suitcase, have them co-mingling with what I know are filthy suitcases, and then bring it in and put those clothes on. The first thing I do when I get home is take everything out of the washer, including the clothes I'm wearing. You wear clothes on a plane? Those aren't touching my couch. Those come off the second I get in the door.
Bob's got an incinerator.
Bob, I think this is some of the best 4 minutes of insight and a window into you that I have thoroughly enjoyed and loved. I am curious, if you dig around today, who is the biggest germaphobe on the Mariners? Who would be the Bob Stelton of the Mariners? That may be one. I don't think that's ever been asked before.
That's a good one.
I'm curious if you kick that around today. Yeah, think about that one, and then I'm going to give you a minute to prepare yourself.
Okay.
Because every day, as you know, you listen every day at 9:45, and every day, Salk and Maura, well, really, Salk and Justin put this thing together. They call it ranked.
Well, Bob has been a part of it. He was a guest ranker in the past, so he definitely.
He was?
Yes.
Okay. So he knows. This has been like Brady's sweet spot. I mean, he's been awesome all week long. Great insights. You know, he's buttoned up. As G said, he dots his I's. He crosses his T's. All of his information, awesome. But he has been in his element ranking. It was WWE wrestlers. It was top five interviews. And I'm kind of looking forward to what he and Justin got cooking next.
I know Maura is, too.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwornfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on Brock and Saul.
Yeah, top 10 list. I'm not buying it.
Ranked.
Okay, so I feel like some qualifiers should have to go out to the beginning of Ranked here, because Brady and I were talking about this in the studio the other day, and we spent so much time talking about the NFL draft and how the success of the Seahawks draft last year with all these players in their freshman year moving into the sophomore season. With that in mind, one of Brady's many passions is grunge music, which, Bob, I think you're also going to be able to ride along with all of this. I asked Brady, what would be your top five grunge band sophomore albums?
Like sophomore year at like Western, or just like their second album?
No, I mean, yeah, follow up to the debut album.
Because we're asking a lot about these Seahawks.
I just have to say
sophomores.
You guys are nerds.
Well, honestly.
It's a great tie-in, honestly, it's a great category.
This conversation sparked quite a debate in the sports pit, and I'm sure.
How long were you all in there debating this?
Well, you know, I was leaving it to Brady. I didn't want to taint his list.
Yeah, I mean, we threw out some albums, and then I went and got home, and I put this together within about 10 minutes. Yeah. That's when you know there's no debate about the list.
This is Bob's wheelhouse.
If
Bob knows two things,
yep.
He knows cleanliness and he knows music.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay? So you're playing with a little bit of fire here, and Bob, bring the fire, bring that heat. when it comes to this list, if you feel so inclined.
Yeah. Now, I'm only going to give you one honorable mention here. The first one. Let's hear it.
Oh, okay.
Now, I don't know if this was second album, first album. You know who this is, Brock? You remember this band?
Is that Bobby?
That's Bob Stone.
It sounds really, really familiar. I'm really trying to place that. It sounds like, you know, amongst the greats, certainly, some of the most successful grunge music to ever come out of Seattle, certainly. A lot of money generated by that band.
What was your best album? Your first, second, third, fourth, fifth? Which one was the best, Bobby?
Those would be best demo tapes. So, yeah.
So we'll call that your second demo tape.
Yes, second.
Yeah, that's good. Look, our second full-fledged demo right there.
There you go. I will listen to that song. I'll pull it up on YouTube. The band was The Living End, right, Bob?
Yeah.
And that song was called By My Side. I will pull that song up on YouTube because it's such a good song. And I'm convinced that that band could have been as big as any of the others. Now, that band sounded a lot to me like Mother Love Bone, and that song especially. And I love that song. I love the band, Bob. That was awesome.
High praise.
Jeez.
Well, and Brady, I love you, buddy. I appreciate it.
I love you too, man.
Man, a lot of love going on so far. I think it's going to change now.
All right, Bob,
okay.
We're going to start with number five, and feel free to be disagreeing and debating, Brady, because you got to come with a qualifier as to why and where these are where they are, okay?
Oh, my.
Yeah, okay. Now this
so you
is.
You want me to give you. Brady goes through his whole list?
Oh,
or
yeah.
How does this work?
Oh, yeah. Brady goes through it. We only have about 5 minutes.
You can tell him why he's right or wrong.
So yeah, this is not a Seattle band, Seattle grunge band, but it's a grunge band nonetheless. This was the 1994 album by Stone Temple Pilots called Purple. So a great follow-up to their debut album, 1992's Core. And this is one of the great songs of this era, not just grunge, but any sort of genre of music from the 90s. Interstate Love Song.
Interstate Love Song. Yeah.
Yeah.
This album also had Vaseline,
Meat
Pretty
Plow.
Penny, Meat Plow, and Glue. Yep. Good one. Okay.
Great album. All right, number four. Now, to be honest with you, I'm going to have to reconsult my list here because I can't remember what exactly I put at number four.
I'll start it for you.
There you go.
Maura, look what happens.
Oh, God, how could I forget? Okay, now my buddy Todd, biggest Soundgarden fan in the world, Bob knows Todd. If Todd's listening right now, he's spitting up his coffee because he's going to say that Louder Than Love should be higher on this list. Soundgarden might be my favorite grunge band, but this was not my favorite follow-up album. That's a great song, though, Loud Love. Brock, you love to talk about athletes with freaky traits.
Yes.
Chris Cornell, not an athlete, but a singer, had a freaky trait. His voice, better than any one of these grunge guys' voices.
You buy in number four on that list, Bob. You like that place?
I love that record. It's not my favorite Soundgarden record, but it is absolutely worthy. It will be in my top five.
Nice.
No question.
Okay. Boom.
There you go.
Okay.
Number three. Okay, now I realize that this is, of course, Nirvana. Everybody loves Nirvana. Everybody knows Nirvana. This is Nevermind. This was the biggest album of the grunge era. I just feel like, to me, this album is kind of a victim of its own success. You got my ex-girlfriend walking around wearing Nirvana t-shirts. She could not name one Nirvana song, let alone three. So I've just heard a little bit too much of this album. That's why it's three and not higher. Still a great album, though.
Wow.
Number two.
Hold on.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, we got to.
Let's let Bob weigh in. Bob, do you think third?
I might have it a little higher. It's obviously on the list. If it's not on the list, then your list doesn't count. I mean, that's just how monumental that record was. I might have it a little higher, but Brady's on the right track, without question.
Do you kind of get sick of hearing it, though?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Quick story. I saw Nirvana before they released Bleach. A buddy of mine loved them, and we went to go see them in Tacoma, and I hated them. They were out of tune. Kurt Cobain, not a great live singer, and I was like, I don't get it, dude. These guys aren't going anywhere. So I clearly nailed that one. It took me a while to get Nirvana, and I love that record. But yeah, obviously it's been played to death.
Okay, number two.
All right, this is Pearl Jam, Versus. Of course, 10 was the big debut album. Versus, I think this might be the best grunge album, aside from number one, but just the best grunge album, period, of this era. Now, some people will say 10, Pearl Jam had a lot of great albums in that era, but I think this is my favorite. That was the song Daughter. I think David Gilmour is the greatest guitar player of all time. Mike McCready is the greatest grunge era guitar player. And you heard why in that solo from Daughter.
That's a take. Bob?
Love it. Love Pearl Jam. Love them. Mike McCready, one of the great people outside of guitar players as well. So, yeah, I mean, you're hitting home runs here. I can tell you right now for a fact, Brock, I know what Brady's number one is.
She was getting to it?
Well, by process of elimination, there can only be one. Yeah.
Well, because it would be just as big of an omission as Nevermind would.
Yeah. This is one of the great bass intros of all time, and this is one of the great grunge songs of all time.
Metallica?
No, not quite. Yeah, not really a grunge band, Metallica.
AC/DC.
This is Alice in Chains.
Oh, yeah.
The song Wood. This is from Dirt. So Facelift was their debut album. That was sort of coming out of the metal era, and then this is really true grunge at its finest right here. Lane Staley. Bob, one of my great memories of working at the station and covering the Seahawks was halftime of the NFC Championship game, January 2015. Alice in Chains with the new singer, of course,
William Duvall.
He played on the Toyota fan deck. Remember you and I racing down from the press box to see that concert at halftime? That's a great memory of mine. And that is a great grunge album, Dirt, by Alice in Chains.
Brilliant piece of work. It is art. That record. There's not a weak moment on that record. It's an absolute classic, and that would be my number one as well. And Brady, I loved running down there to watch those guys jam at what was CenturyLink at the time. And that's another quick fact. We had the same manager as Alison Chase back in the day. But as you see, the talent went out there. They went on to be huge, and then I'm here talking to you guys. So. That it was just a completely different set of circumstances for our band. But, yeah, and I still get a chance to go motorcycle riding with Sean Kinney, the drummer, every now and again.
So, is that right?
Awesome.
One of my all-time favorite bands, period, and that album is absolutely classic.
Well, some will say that's the best 24 minutes of radio that Bob Stelton's ever done at 9:30. I mean, some will say that. I will book it. I will confirm it. Bob, you are a star. Have a wonderful final day down there in Peoria. We are 6 days away from opening day with these Mariners. Brady, you absolutely crushed it all week long. You're no longer a freshman. You will graduate into your sophomore year, the next show that you are on with all of us. Been a blast, man. I really do appreciate all the time that you have taken and insight and wisdom that you have brought.
Thank you.
Been so much fun. Maura, Justin, as per usual.
Huge round of applause for Maura. She's had a big week, so she's done a fantastic job. A lot of time, energy, effort goes into what she does, and not a lot of people get to see it, so she deserves credit.
They will be back at it 6 a.m. Monday morning, Brady, but for this week and this day. And thanks again, Bob Stelton, for jumping on from Arizona as well. The hay, my friend?
It's in the barn.
Bumpin' Station next.
Get to the chopper!